The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Thursday edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. And a really pleasant day. I've been lucky last couple of days with some pleasant temperatures. A lot of rain coming for the next couple of days, however. So make sure you dress accordingly and take extra help, umbrella, whatever, with you for the game if you're headed to Rupp Arena on Saturday afternoon for Kentucky and Utah. Coming up today, we'll talk about Kentucky basketball, but not so much the matchup with the Utes, but more the departure of Quad A. Green, who announced his transfer yesterday. We'll do that with Kyle Tucker of The Athletic, Mike Pratt, and Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated. That's our guest lineup, presented by Sleep Outfitters. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Buddy Green said it was, quote, a difficult decision that he made yesterday to leave the Kentucky basketball program at the semester break. So he'll find a new home and then be eligible to play at the semester break next season. We'll see where he lands. He's a Philly guy, so maybe he goes back home into that area. Cal said, quote, that when he sat down with Quad A, quote, felt like he was in a position he couldn't overcome. And I can see that. I think he was losing minutes and didn't look like that was probably going to turn around. Ashton Hagens is playing more as he's become started to, I think, grab hold of that point guard position. Quickly will be in the mix there as well, but Quickly can play off the ball. It's Quickly's a better defender, and so that's going to get him minutes ahead of Quad A. Coming into the season, I kind of thought Quad A might be the starter to begin, and then Tyler Hero eventually overtakes him, but Tyler got off to such a fast start down at the Bahamas that he grabbed that job right from the start. Quad A's a hard worker. You remember down in the Bahamas, he had a bad shooting night in the first game and went back to the gym at midnight to work on a shot, and then really shot it well over the last three games. So I'm sure he'll do well. Wish him well. Had a big, big bright smile. Remember the game against Virginia Tech last year when he came off the bench to get 17 points and 5 assists. Had gotten poked in the eye up at Monmouth, against Monmouth at the Garden. So he had to wear those shades, and it was a cool look. And he kept it into the next game, I think against UCLA, and then things didn't go as well, and he quickly got rid of them. But that was a probably the most memorable Quad A moment was that game, how well he played and how cool the shades looked on the court in Rupp Arena. It's kind of, I think, back to a line, this is probably true with point guards, I think it was a Hal Mumby line regarding quarterbacks, that they're born to transfer, and probably true with point guards as well if you get passed up in the battle for minutes. Kentucky picked up a football commit, a preferred walk-on from Belfry High School. Dagan, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, D-A-G-E-N, Rush, 6'2", 280, plays guard for Belfry. From what I read, he's projected as a center. J.J. Weaver is waiting so he can sign with his teammates in February at Moore High School, but he put on his Twitter post he is not just 100% committed to Kentucky, but 110%. Future Cat Dante Allen, 53 points last night. I think that's four games with 50 or more now. He went over 3,000 for his career in Pendleton County's win over Robertson County. Pendleton County put up 116 points. By the way, if you want to see the Cats and the Cards at the Yum Center later this month, there are single-game tickets available. U of L's put those on sale. Looked up last night. Most of them, as you would expect, are in the upper deck, but good seats that you can get for the Cats and the Cards. Anthony Davis had his second consecutive game with 40-plus points last night. He had 44 for OKC, and at one point in the game, There were six Kentucky players on the floor, three from OKC and three from the Pelicans. And Cal tweeted out about that. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Kyle Tucker's first up on the phones. When we return, it's the Leach Report Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
Find out more about the voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
We had the Kentucky Brandon Hotline. Bring on Kyle Tucker from The Athletic, where he, I think, was the one who broke the story yesterday about Quade Green deciding to leave the University of Kentucky. Were you surprised?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I think certainly surprised by the suddenness of it. I don't think anybody expected him to bounce with three games left, just even in this semester. Certainly would have been a thing. It wouldn't have shocked me if he said, oh, he's going to talk it over with the staff during the Christmas break and figure it out or whatever. But I think a little surprising that he just said, hey, you know what, I'm out of here. You know, he played 8 minutes against UNC Greensboro. He played 10 minutes against Seton Hall. And, you know, his role had been diminished for sure. There's no question about it. His minutes were down from last season, about 8 minutes a game, something like that. And, you know, obviously wasn't a starter. So I get that he wanted more for sure. I was mainly surprised, I think, by the quickness of it.
Cal, in his statement, said Quade told him he felt he was in a position he couldn't overcome. I could see where he would feel that way, because you look at it and Hagen's minutes are increasing. You know, quickly starts to make shots. He'll play, he'll get some of those minutes at the two as Hagen's plays more at the one. And so Quade becomes the odd man out.
Yeah. It's a strange situation because so much of the, I think, excitement about this team from everybody was, hey, they've got three sophomores back, all McDonald's All-Americans, who contributed something or a lot last season, but all of them contributed at least something. And, you know, Quade was, of the three, probably the most reliable shot maker and hit a game winner. And so there was hope that was going to be this foundation. It hasn't necessarily worked out that way. Nick Richards hasn't been great and has kind of faded away as well. PJ has had some really good games and is coming off a great one. But Quade has found himself kind of where I thought he would be when they ended up getting Ashton Hagens and Quickly and Hero, was like, where do you put him? I mean, the other two guys, whoever wins the point guard job, the other two guys are probably need to be on the floor as a two guard. And that's kind of been Quade's role. So I can see from his perspective, like, where do I fit? Now, I would have argued, while he's a defensive liability, he is the most reliable three-point shot maker. And if he had stayed, I would have probably advocated trying to work on some things to get him open shots, because somebody's going to make some threes. But now that role is going to have to go to somebody else. Tyler Hill needs to start making them. Quickly needs to start making them. And it certainly opens the door for Jamal Baker.
Yeah, it does. If he can stay healthy, he ought to be able to make three-point shots. And you could say, well, he's, you know, an issue, a liability defensively, but that was Quade's problem. And I said earlier, I thought coming into the year that Quade might be the starting two guard to begin with because of his three-point shooting and experience, but he'd ultimately get overtaken by Tyler. And then Tyler got off to such a great start at the Bahamas. And the other thing I think that came out of the Bahamas, that they probably deduced pretty quickly that it would be very difficult to play Tyler and Quade together on the floor. Even though they're both great three-point shooters, it would be hard to disguise two defensive liabilities. And that became an issue for Quade, I think.
Yeah, that's very much the case. The thing about Quade is, if he's on the floor, you can't have anybody else who has any defensive issues. And so, you know, that limits him in what combinations he can play in. Size is also an issue. You're playing him off the ball, he's a 6 foot, maybe, shooting guard. And he's, you know, not overly big, you know, just like in physical stature either. He's kind of a smallish dude, and so that alone puts you at a disadvantage defensively. And then if you don't have you know, if you're not quick and aggressive like Tyler Ulis, then you can't be undersized and not be not have that kind of mentality on defense. And so it's just with all the factors at play, it was going to be difficult for him to earn time this year. And then you look forward, you know, to next year, and there's not NBA prospects right now for Quad A, and here comes Tyrese Maxey and some other guys. So, you know, he probably made the right decision, and frankly, it was probably the decision he should have made this summer when there were all the rumors of transfers, and he kind of denied those. I think he knew probably instinctively as soon as they finished out their roster, but, you know, credit to him for staying long enough to find out for sure.
Yeah, true. Good point. And where do you think he ends up?
I've seen Washington. I think Matt Jones has been heavy on the Washington, and people have said, you know, I don't get that. But the head coach at Washington now is the former top assistant at Syracuse, a guy who really surprised everybody by not waiting to be Boeheim's replacement. That was kind of the plan. He decided to do his own thing, and I think there's a family issue with that. We had a story at The Athletic about why he went all the way across the country to Washington. But anyway, that was Syracuse was his other finalist. He's from Philadelphia, relatively close proximity there in the Northeast, and they had really recruited him hard, and that may have been the right fit for him, the better fit for him. But that guy who was leading that recruitment is now the head coach at Washington. So that would make a lot of sense. Also, to me, it would make maybe even more sense for him to go to a place like Temple, or I think LaSalle was rumored, one of those places there in Philadelphia or in the area that's maybe down a half a step in competition, because I think Quade could be a great college player in the right situation and at the right level. Will he ever be an NBA player? That's hard for me to see, but I think he could have a really good college career if he picks the right place.
And for those of you that cover the guys, look for quotes, etc. He was good in that area. He was always a big smile and seemed like a, you know, eager to talk.
Yeah, I thought he was one of the more entertaining people. He said one of the funniest things ever in the open locker room, headed to when they were going to Atlanta. I guess somebody asked him if he knew what people called Atlanta, Kentucky fans called Atlanta, and he said, "Oh yeah," very confidently. "Oh yeah, Cat City." Was one of my favorite, lines. But he was a character. He would say some off the wall things, but he always had, as you said, a great attitude, a big smile on his face. A very nice kid, and I think Cal mentioned that in his comments. The thing that stood out from him to him with Quad A was just what a nice, good kid he was, and I haven't heard anybody disagree with that. It just was, I think, a bad fit here, but he's, you know, I think everybody involved wishes him well.
I think on that Facebook Live behind-the-scenes thing they did last year, one of the early episodes, there was a really sweet moment where he was FaceTiming with his mom, maybe, and little sister from his room at the lodge, and it was just a really, you know, touching moment, and I think, but, you know, help fans connect with him. So I think he was a bit of a fan favorite for that reason and others.
Yeah, absolutely. I and, you know, again, he hit some pretty big shots for them. I think
yeah, he did.
He doesn't have to feel bad about his contribution to this team.
Kyle, appreciate the time. I always say you can find him at The Athletic, and it's around this time of year. It's a great Christmas gift. We told you Mr. Pratt did that. I actually sent one to a friend yesterday, so it's a good thing you can do for
good
Christmas
man.
For that hard-to-buy-for person. So, thanks, you for Kyle. The time. See you. It's Kyle Tucker from The Athletic. We'll take a quick break. Mike Pratt's next up on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
26 after the top of the hour, we head back to the Kentucky Branded Hotline to bring on Mike Pratt. His weekly visits to the show presented by Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. You can check them out at boonesbutchershop.com. I tweeted out a picture of Quad A from his post game with you after the Virginia Tech game last season, Mike, to wish him well. I saw you retweeted that with a note. He was a fun guy for you to interview, wasn't he?
He really was. Tom, and I, the minute I saw that picture, I remembered it. and in remembering it, brought back a lot of good memories about that young fella. He was a tough little guy, and he always seemed to enjoy himself playing. He seemed to be enjoy himself being around, and he was out there early, always working, one of the hardest working guys before the game. And remembered that over in the Bahamas that he was out shooting at night because he didn't
yes.
make his shots. And I hate to see him go. I understand he wants to play more. And, you know, evidently he feels he can't get it at Kentucky. One of his problems, he's really, we usually associate tweeners with guys like me who played forward in college and have to move to the guard at 6'3". Or 6'5 and 6'7. Now it's 6'7 and 6'8. You know, play inside, you're going to have to play outside. There's all kinds of variations of tweeners. His game is really a two guard, but he's got the body of a one guard. And he tries and really, I thought, gave a great effort, but evidently didn't make him happy. Seems like Cal hates to see him go too, but, you know, guys have to make decisions based on how they feel their future is going to go. So I respect that and wish him nothing but the best. He was a good kid. He really was.
Tony Delk was a guy a little like that in terms of an undersized two guard. They tried him at the point, and he was better at the two. But Tony had such long arms that he played bigger than he measured.
Yeah, that's the only reason I could play forward is I have long arms. And you know, that's the only reason I could do that in college is it helps your rebound. And,
yeah.
and you can do things defensively, whatnot. Quade he finds a place where they're okay with a 6-foot point guard who can score. That's his home. Cal historically hasn't liked smaller guards, so I would guess that may have defensively played into some thinking. But the kid's going to be – he's going to have a nice rest of his college career, wherever he goes. I believe that.
He had a knack for – and I think back to the Southern Illinois game this year where the Cats were struggling a little bit, and he was the guy that came in and hit a big shot to kind of ease the tension. He had a knack for doing that.
He was a fearless player. I mean, he tried defensively. He got in, mixed it up. He played passing lanes, doubled down on guys. I mean, he did a lot of things defensively. But, you know, sometimes with the lack of size in Calipari's deal, his philosophy on defense can hurt you, but he always tried. He always was trying to do things. Sometimes I think he pushed the edge of the envelope passing the ball sometimes and made some ill-advised decisions. Fewer this year than last. I think last year he may have made more of those type situations or have more of those situations than he did this year.
Mike Pratt's with us. It's at MikePratt22 on Twitter. Bob tweets in, is Quade officially off the roster? No remaining games. Yeah, he is leaving. He is moving on to the next chapter in his basketball life. More with Mike Pratt when we come right back on the Leach Report.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Second half of our Leach Report for Thursday. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, and Mike Pratt is with us talking about the departure of Quade Green. He was one of the better three-point shooters. Kentucky's been struggling, obviously, in that area. Manuel quickly hit a couple at the Garden last week, which was encouraging to see. He should be shooting a higher percentage. Obviously, Tyler Herro at 27%. Yeah, if he made five of his next 10, he'd be back up in the mid-30s. So part of it is you got to remember he's only 9 games into the season. But what do you see in his game that could get him going? Is it simply a matter of, you know, he's taking good shots, they're just not going in, or do you see something else?
You're talking about Tyler now, right?
Correct, Tyler.
Okay. I think he needs to go back and review his shot. If he's going straight up, straight down, leaning back, whatever it may be, and make sure that his body is where he wants it to be on a shot, where it's always been. There's no
no need to change anything. Sometimes you get a little out of whack. A hitter might drop his hands or something else in his swing, and they can correct it by watching swings that he has in the game. Well, you can watch this, and you look and see if he's going straight up, straight down. I think he's lean a little bit. I went back and looked at the game Saturday, yesterday, or Sunday, and I thought I saw him leaning a little bit on some shots. So get his body under control. Get it where he wants it. The other thing is you can always look at your shot selection. You can always try to see, am I getting good shots? Can I get – the real quick question is, can I get a better shot? And that's where it all starts. Can I make one more pass, or can I take two more dribbles, whatever it may be? Can I finish a little stronger at the rim? Am I fading on that kind of shot when I go to the rim, but I need to go strong? All those kind of things, shot selection, what you're doing with your shot are really important and can be watched on the video. I mean, that's why you tape the games.
Didn't Malik have a little issue with that at times where he would lean back a little bit on his shot?
I think all shooters do. You get a little little lax, a little loose with your shot, and that sometimes comes when you're not when you've got a lot of success and you're not really paying attention because you're so successful that you get some bad habits. Getting out of the bad habits is the key, and it just takes concentration and work with what you see on the tape. And yeah, I think Malik probably did. I think most shooters do have stretches where they get themselves out of the rhythm, out of how they want to shoot it. And then you got to look at what kind of shots am I taking and what's my form.
Yeah, and to your point about looking at the video, that's what a golfer would do if the driver gets erratic. They would watch the tape and then go to the driving range.
That's what I do all the time. It never helps, but I try.
Cal has talked about, and we've talked about this guy with you before, Del Curry, how quick his release was when you were down with the Hornets. And Cal has talked about they've sped up Tyler's release. And he told me in the pregame last week, and granted Tyler didn't shoot it well at the Garden, but he said they had started to see his numbers come back up in practice. Initially, they went down in the shooting that they track in practice when they worked to speed up his release, but they had seen them come back. So hopefully that'll show in this next game Saturday, even though it didn't last Saturday. But talk to fans a little bit about what they're doing. They're not so much changing the shot, but speeding up the release, right?
Yeah, you just have to be a little quicker when you catch it. First of all, you got to be set and ready to go. Okay, that's part of it. I mean, you can't not be ready on the catch to shoot the ball. And then to move it to the shooting, the release point, is something you practice on. And you could teach any kid that. I mean, you watch, does he wind it up? Does he drop it down low? Does he wind it up before he shoots it? You just got to think, I catch it, boom, I release it. And they'll watch your mechanics and talk to you about getting out of your hand quicker. And that's not something that's ever it's not been taught before, and people work on it because a lot of guys do have slower releases or odd release points, and you can encourage them and you can work with them to get the ball out quicker. It just takes a little bit of time. And sometimes guys get a whole lot better. Some guys get a little better. Sometimes they can't do it, and it is what it is. So I think they are working on that quicker release with Tyler and get it to the release point and get it out.
And I don't think they're changing the release point. It's just the time it takes to get from the load up, from the catch to that release point. Much like a quarterback, sometimes you hear coaches and talking about quarterbacks getting the ball out quicker. Sometimes guys, I think Terry Wilson had a little bit of this where he held the ball a little lower, and when you recognize the open shot or the open receiver, then you've got the longer it takes to load it up, the more time the defender has to close.
And that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about breaking his shot down and changing his shot. We're just talking about making the shot quicker to get out, and everything's the same, but you just get it out. You think shot quicker, and your mind registers quicker, and it's gone. And it's not like a big surgery, okay? And
yeah.
It's just something you have to concentrate on, you have to work with and work on, and then pretty soon it just becomes natural.
Calipari said on Monday that his guys aren't willing enough passers yet. What do you see in that regard as far as their ball movement?
Well, I think at times the ball moves pretty well, but I think there are times when, and I think you and I have talked about this, either off or on the air, I think when you look inside, there's just, you know, the window is, again, like a quarterback. That window opens and it shuts pretty quick, and you move to the next level, NFL, and that window's real small and it shuts quickly. Well, I think when you're feeding the post, the same thing happens relatively. That, you know, the guy's dancing in there trying to hold the defender. Defender's trying to fight over the top or around the bottom, whatever it may be. You've got to look inside quickly. As soon as you catch it, or even you've got to know where your teammate is before the ball gets to you and anticipate. And once you catch it, you feed it. And you feed it in good, in quickly in the good spot. The other night I was having dinner with Dampier and Issel, and we were laughing. I told Dan, I said, man, you were easy to pass to. I said, because, you could go get a pass, whether I missed through it or not, or anybody missed through it. You had great hands, great body control to keep a defender on your back. And I said, sometimes guys, they don't dance as long as they can to make it easier for the passer, or they don't reach and get it. I mean, that's all part of receiving the ball, is a passer and a receiver. But I think we can look inside quicker and make quicker passes and then swing it to the other side. The swing east and west, side to side, it hurts the defense more than anything. And the more we do of that, the easier it's going to become to find some shots that you like.
All of the assists you gave those guys, they bought your dinner, right?
Yeah, Uke, he was Bill Cotley's predecessor. He was really tight with the assists back then. And Casey, the late Mike Casey and I used to laugh about that all the time, It had to be a layup, one bounce at the most. It was no assist on jump shots. And nobody bought dinner.
Well, too bad. Mike Pratt, yeah. Thank you much. We'll see you on Saturday afternoon.
Okay, buddy.
At Mike Pratt 22 on Twitter. And he joins us courtesy of Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. Leeds Report served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, their holiday food drive backpack program that they're partnering with Southland Christian Church on here in Lexington is underway. So if you're in Central Kentucky, go to the church's website and you can see the types of items that they're looking for, and then take those to the Wild Eggs in Hamburg or in Palomar and help stuff those backpacks, things like fruit cups and applesauce cups and granola bars and instant soups and those kinds of things, peanut butter crackers, cheese and crackers, etc. Take them to the Wild Eggs in Hamburg or in Palomar. We'll be right back with Justin Rowland of Cats Illustrated.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach, KY.
Back to the Kentucky Branded Hotline on this Thursday edition of the Leach Report. And we bring on Justin Rowland from CatsIllustrated.com. On Twitter, it's at Roland Rivals. What's your take on the departure of Quade Green?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, I think Kyle Tucker was on, and he reported yesterday and kind of clarified something on Twitter that it wasn't unexpected that he was leaving. What was unexpected was the timing, and that makes sense. It's just rare, unless the team is just absolutely rolling, for somebody, a sophomore, playing those kind of minutes until the last two games to leave. But, I mean, I think it could be best for both parties. I mean, Kentucky's perimeter defense had been a problem. Quade was a part of that. He was an offensive asset in some areas. But I think for this team to reach its potential, it needs Quickly and Hero and Hagan to be the guys in the backcourt. So hopefully it'll work out for both sides.
Yeah, I think ultimately shrinking the rotation is the right move for Cal, and he was doing that, and I guess that's what Quade could see and decided to go ahead and get a jump start on his new basketball home.
Yeah, I think so, and leaving when he does now before the second semester, he'll be able to play earlier than he otherwise would have been able to, and this is something that was speculated you know, after last season, he stuck it around. I think nowadays in sports, you know, when it comes to, you know, players sitting out bowl games, guys transferring, quarterbacks transferring so much, they're just, some people are shaken to the core by this stuff, and it just rubs them the wrong way. But I think now we're just coming to maybe a wider understanding that, you know, guys have to do what's in their best interest because they don't have, you know, unlimited eligibility. And I think hopefully people are more understanding of that.
As I said earlier, the line about quarterbacks are born to transfer, but it's just you see a lot more guys transfer now than you used to, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Yeah, in basketball, you know, the transfer pool, the transfer market has really become, you know, a huge part, you know, that pretty much everybody's dabbling in. And, you know, sometimes Kentucky's going to be the beneficiary of it, sometimes just like decommitments in both sports, football especially, sometimes Kentucky's going to suffer from it. I'm not sure what the immediate outcome is. It'll be interesting to see if the team, how the team emotionally handles it, rallies around one another, because he was one of the older guys on the team, and it'll just be interesting to see how they respond and how it changes the dynamic right away.
He was one of their better three-point shooters, and they obviously need, in the worst way, to get Hero and Quickly going in that area. Quickly did make a couple finally last week, because it's not that Kentucky has to make 10 or 12 a game. It's just that what's killing them is the between them not making enough and the other team making so many, it's the differential that, you know, if you're a, you know, minus two or three, that's a lot easier to overcome than, you know, they were minus six last week and, you know, minus eight, 10. Those are hard deficits to overcome when you're giving up six, eight, 10 more three-point baskets.
Yeah, that's true, especially when the other team is shooting as well as they are against Kentucky. And you got to figure there's going to be some regression to the mean just in terms of how opponents have shot against Kentucky. Some of it's been the defense, but a lot of it has just been, I think, in the last game against Seton Hall, the guy that Ashton Hagans was guarding was, whoever it was 6 of 11 for 19 points. And I went back and looked. And he actually played pretty good defense. And at some point, these shots, Kentucky fans have to hope, are just not going to fall like they have been. And Kentucky has made up some of that discrepancy at the free throw line just because they get there and they convert as well as just about any team in the country. They have to hope that that continues as the schedule gets tougher as well, because that's where Kentucky's gotten a lot of its offense this year.
Yeah, they didn't have, I think they had more free throw points than Seton Hall last week, but it wasn't by much. And so they didn't maximize that advantage, and they didn't maximize their advantage in offensive rebounding like they had been. So those were two areas that they didn't play to their strength as well as they needed to when the other team was playing to their deficiencies at the three-point line.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it'll just be interesting. You know, Kentucky is running an interesting offense in this day and age. That's not to say that it can't work, but as more and more teams are going, you know, behind the three-point line and spreading things out and shooting more three-pointers, this is really the second consecutive year for Kentucky when three-pointers have been less a part of what they're doing. And I did a study on Reed Travis yesterday where, you know, at Stanford, he pretty much had free rein to do what he wanted on offense. And I think we expected he would have more of a clear niche role at Kentucky where there's going to be more talent around him, but the percentage of his points that come off post-ups as opposed to spot-ups and isolation and putting the ball on the floor have doubled from 13% to 27%. So I think he's just running a little bit different look than a lot of teams in college basketball are, and it can work, but they've got to have these guys fall into more clear roles like we've talked about.
You guys do a lot of study of some of those advanced metrics we talked about before in football. With the basketball stats, any other particularly interesting numbers that have emerged?
Yeah, I think as far as Reed Travis, he's one that I've been really looking at recently because he was such a topic in the offseason. There's really no reason for anybody to complain about him. Just offensively, he rates as excellent, like in the top 85, 90 percentile of all players nationally in everything, against man-to-man defense, against zone defense, in transition, in half court. And defensively, I was kind of wondering before the season if he was going to potentially be a liability or maybe a push, and he's really held his own. You know, he hasn't been great, but he's pretty much held his own. And I'll start looking at some of these other players soon, but I think initial returns, you know, Travis was one of Kentucky's few, you know, quality players against Duke, and he's just been consistent in his effort and in his performance. And I think because people have been kind of critical of this team, we may be overlooking just what he's doing this year so far.
Over to the football side, J.J. Weaver, he says he's 110% committed now. any reason for Kentucky fans to be worried?
Yeah, I don't think there is a reason to be worried. I think this guy, there's an understanding, you know, behind the scenes that he was going to pick Kentucky for pretty much like a month before his commitment. And the staff, Vince Morrow, and everybody did a really good job of recruiting him and winning him over, and it just happened to coincide with Josh Allen's rise and the 9 wins and the defense improving a lot, and Louisville's taking a huge step back. I will say, when he says, I'm just waiting until February because it's a business decision and I'm open to what other schools have to say, it's understandable. Kentucky fans feel like they've been burned, that they don't consider that 100% committed. But I do think this is a different situation than like Wandale and some of the quarterback decommitments recently. I think he's going to stick.
Yeah, that math doesn't add up. I don't blame fans there. If you're 100% committed, then you don't listen to anybody else. You say you're 99%
committed. The way things are right now. And I think it would have to take like a coaching shakeup at Kentucky, you know, or Alabama. Somebody told me that it would take Alabama offering him a starting spot in his first year for him to flip. And I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, he committed to Kentucky. He's a South Florida guy. He had a Miami offer. He had a Florida offer. He's in Louisville. He's had two Louisville coaching staffs court him. I mean, he's had plenty of opportunities to go somewhere else. I just don't see it happening.
Justin, appreciate the time as always. We'll talk to you next
week. Thanks a lot, Tom.
That's Justin Rowland, CatsIllustrated.com, at Rowland Rivals on Twitter. We'll be right back to wrap up this edition of the Leach Report.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Going into the way, 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 way back machine for a Donato slice of Wildcat history today. 1924 on this date, Kentucky beat Cincinnati 28-23. It was significant because it was the first game played in Alumni Gym, the new home at that time for Kentucky basketball, built for a whopping $100,000. Keeneland announced yesterday they're going to start the spring meet one day earlier than usual. It'll be on Thursday, April 4th this year. And the reason is that they don't race on Easter Sunday so that they won't lose a day off their spring meet. They're going to start a day earlier. So that'll be fun. And they've added a couple of sprint stakes races to the stakes card as well. It's going to do it for us. Back tomorrow, Mike DeCourcy, Utah radio voice Bill Riley, and former Cat Jeff Brasso talking about the 93 team reunion this weekend. See you then.
Page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next.